We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan. Before we begin, let's start off with our excellent series, I'm Listening. Here's Odyssey's own Corey Crockett with One Thing Earth Day.
This weekend, Odyssey celebrates Earth Day. Hi, I'm Corey Crockett. All weekend, people nationwide will volunteer their time, energy, and resources to make a difference in their own communities, picking up trash, planting trees, cleaning our beaches. But it's not just something that starts and ends with this one weekend. Odyssey's Karina Delgado, based at 94.7 The Drive in D.C., helms our conversation today with the Nature Conservancy. She's joined by CEO Jennifer Morris and Program Coordinator Morgan Foster. Morgan actually joined the organization after taking part in one of their youth programs. Now, youth outreach has become a huge priority for the Nature Conservancy. In fact, this year, they're focused on supporting the next generation of changemakers who are demanding a better future for our planet and leading the way, and celebrating emerging leaders working across the globe to build a better future. Jennifer and Morgan join Karina to talk about conservation of and investment in nature and how it might be a forgotten piece when we talk about the fight against climate change. And it goes hand in hand with one thing, Odyssey's commitment to sustainability. We believe that if everyone just did one thing to make a difference in their communities to help the environment, together that's millions of things. All right, let's check in now with Karina in the nation's capital.
It's Karina Delgado on Earth Day. Hard to believe that it's already come back around again. And of course, we are here with two wonderful women today speaking about how to change this world, not just this year, but for the years to come. Jennifer, please introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Morris, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Nature Conservancy.
And Morgan?
Hi, everyone. My name is Morgan Foster. I'm the Program Coordinator for the Impact Finance and Markets Division and the Program Coordinator for the Supporting Oyster Aquaculture and Restoration Team.
First, let's talk about the Nature Conservancy. For those of our audience who are unfamiliar, can you please tell us a little bit about the organization?
Of course. So the Nature Conservancy is actually the world's largest environmental organization. We have field operations in every single U.S. state, as well as in 77 countries around the world.
Wow.
And we're really dedicated to two primary things. One is to help improve the plight of nature around the world, or what we call the biodiversity crisis, as well as to combat climate change. And we do that through deep relationships in local communities and all of those places, as well as working with companies and, of course, governments.
It actually is something that is very urgent. And at one point, I speak for my generation, which is Generation X, it perhaps didn't feel that way. But these days, it's definitely a conversation that is going to require all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely critical. And, you know, that's why it's so important to engage youth as well in the movement. And we, as the Nature Conservancy, have over 6,000 staff in all these places around the world. But you're so right. The urgency is now, both on climate change, which, of course, we hear about on a daily basis. But, you know, often people forget that nature is also in crisis. Mm-hmm. We have lost so many species around the world, and we are working very hard as the Nature Conservancy and so many partners to actually change that trajectory, to try to restore ecosystems and to preserve the ones that we have around the world that still maintain high levels of biodiversity.
Speak a little more, please, to conservation and not only what that means to you, but to us as audience members and why it's important.
Absolutely. So, you know, when we think about conserving nature, we often think about, you know, sort of species far away from mm-hmm. our urban environments. And actually, preserving nature is about all of us humans. If we lose access to watersheds, if we lose access to pollinators for food crops, it's going to be much more difficult for humans to survive on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. So nature really is about all of us. And what the Nature Conservancy does, as well as many of our partners listeners around the world is really try to change the conversation of thinking of nature as far away in some remote location, but really it's here. From from how hot it is in cities, we need to be planting more trees to reduce that heat, from ensuring that our watersheds are healthy so that we have the water that we need for drinking water and for agriculture, which of course is the largest user of water around the world. About 70% of our water actually goes into growing food and food production around the world. So ecosystem protection, preserving nature, is not just about biodiversity in nature itself, but really about protecting us.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because of course, as you said, you talk about eco protection and everybody immediately thinks the rainforests, and you know, you have this idea of the Amazon in your mind. But in truth, when you speak to agriculture, that also greatly impacts the supply chain, where we're getting our food, sustainable sources, and as you said, pollinating the food with making sure that the insects are okay so that agriculture continues. And so I'm so glad that we're having that conversation today. And oh, by the way, not to mention these oysters. Okay, I'm taking the pin back out. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with that.
Yes, so I work for the Supporting Oyster Aquaculture or Restoration Team, SOAR, as it's known. We do love a good acronym. And this program was started back when the pandemic was going on as a way to purchase oysters from farmers. Restaurants had closed. They needed an additional revenue stream. And these oysters were used for restoration projects. And so a lot of these farmers didn't have the opportunity to do restoration projects in the past. But now that we've kind of had a few iterations, they've been really excited about this and have indicated that that's something that they're really interested in. And now SOAR is transitioning to be more mindful of the aquaculture industry as a whole. So something that we're thinking about going forward is how can we make sure that this industry is diverse and is set up to be able to, you know, stand up against the climate change threats that are really impacting that industry.
How did you get into this field?
So I went to the University of Virginia, and while I was there, I had an opportunity to do my senior thesis about coastal erosion in Wachapreek, Virginia, which is on the little like coast peninsula. And it was a really amazing opportunity. I was very hands-on, getting to go out in the field, looking at oysters that were being used to protect against a wave erosion. And so that really fostered my general interest in being able to work with this part of aquaculture and this kind of form of erosion control.
And before working in aquaculture, have you always had an interest in conservation?
I have. My parents will know this story quite well. When I was younger, we were learning about the three R's in elementary school: reduce, reuse, and recycle. And I immediately went home and I was like, Mom and Dad, we have to get our recycling bin out from under the deck. We have to start now. And it was a very kind of moment of, we can have an impact as individuals, which I think is extremely important for folks to be able to get involved in the conservation space, you know, wherever they are and wherever they are in their conservation journey.
You know, when I was in school, it was reading, writing, arithmetic. Do you remember that?
Yes, exactly. I love that we've evolved our three R's, right?
Yes. And what about you, Jennifer? How did you get into conservation?
So my journey actually started when I was a volunteer in northern Namibia in southwest part of Africa. And I went there really thinking that I was going to go into public health. This is 2 years after I graduated from college. Mm. And I got there and quickly realized that so many of the health problems, I was working with women. I was a volunteer working on a women's project there. And so many of the issues there were actually really more upstream. So the lack of access to fresh water were causing a lot of diseases, and
wow,
and drinking brackish water that had, you know, wasn't good for people to be drinking. Mm-hmm. The fact that many of the former agricultural production was becoming much more difficult to grow because of increasing droughts in this area. And so I sort of had quite a few aha moments while I was there, thinking, you know, instead of focusing on the impacts of a deteriorating local ecosystem, I wanted to focus on nature protection and climate mm-hmm. change issues a little bit more upstream to help prevent some of the diseases that I was seeing in my village, and particularly impacting women and children. So I changed my career path then and wow. there, and decided to focus on economic development at the time, really focus focused on women in Africa, and then kind of made an interesting career shift into conservation and never looked back. And I've been doing this now for 27 years and think it's really the most important work that we're doing now is to help prevent the tragedies that we're seeing on a daily basis that mm-hmm. are becoming increasingly challenging as we see the freight train of climate change really upon us. And that's why I love the work that Morgan is doing at the Nature Conservancy and so many other programs that involve youth. Because, and I don't think we should, you know, we often say like youth is the future and it's up to the youth. We're doing it for the youth. Yes, but it's up to us to do something now. Mm-hmm. We can't just kick the can down the road and expect Morgan's generation to be able to solve all these problems, but involving Morgan and others like her now to actually roll up their sleeves and understand these big challenges and then help them have the tools to go back to their own communities as well as to help other communities is the most important work in the world. So Morgan, thank you for everything you're doing for the Nature Conservancy and the things that you're going to do in the future for your career.
You know, it's so interesting that it's actually almost in the lens that your interest in health and humanitarian efforts was a realization that these issues are a byproduct of an eroding environment, and to make that pivot in order to create some prevention is almost the same for any health conversation. It's that prevention, a pound of prevention is worth an ounce of cure, and the same can be said for the health of this planet.
Absolutely. No, you said that so well. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing constantly is that, you know, so many parts of our planet right now are in the emergency room. You know, mm-hmm. we're just focusing on how do we address.
Triage.
Exactly. Yeah. How do we address? I mean, so much of the migration that we're seeing into the U.S. as well as around the world is because of an inability to actually grow food and mm-hmm. an inability for rural communities in particular to have the same livelihoods that their parents had. So they need to find a better place. And if we're able as a global community to actually address the upstream topics, whether it's, you know, helping with more restoration, helping to actually reduce the amount of global emissions we have very quickly in the path that we need to do and accelerate. And, you know, of course, we all signed up to Paris, but we're not moving fast enough on mm-hmm. that global emissions trajectory downward. So that is causing us all to think like triage doctors. Mm-hmm. And what we are trying to do at TNC, as well as many of our partners, is to say, yes, but we need to continue to be mitigating to be able to be reducing that the future impacts that we're going to have. And that includes nature. Often people don't think of nature when they think of the climate crisis. They think, of course, of, you know, reducing our reliance on fossil fuels. And that's absolutely critical. But we also need to remember that 30% of the solution to the climate crisis is actually in how we produce our food and mm-hmm. how we treat our forests and how we treat our oceans. So we often call that the forgotten solution. It's absolutely critical that we're investing in nature protection because it's not only good for climate, but it's of course good for those pollinators and watershed services that we spoke about earlier. It's absolutely essential. With $1 going to nature protection, you can actually achieve so many more things than only working on the energy transition, which is happening, needs to happen faster, but don't forget nature.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of those activations, what are some things that our audience members can do immediately in their lives to start to make that change out of the emergency room onto the ward and into a healthy place as a planet?
I think that making space for folks to get involved is probably most crucial. I live here in Washington, D.C., and one of my favorite things that I got to do last year was work at our community garden. It was an opportunity to not only, you know, be able to be out and be in nature and be able to grow food, but we were also being able to provide fresh food and vegetables for folks that are living in the area that might not otherwise have access to that. And I think that was a true moment of like making space for the individual to get involved wherever they are. You know, I do live in a big city, and so sometimes it is hard to get that connection to nature and be able to see, you know, that this is, you know, impactful. And so I think that opportunities like that are extremely important for folks that want to get involved on the individual scale.
Sure. And Jennifer, if you could recommend one thing What would that be?
Yeah, well, my one thing this year, I have to say, is to get out and vote. Mm. And vote for the people that, you know, share your values, that are going to support nature conservation. They're going to support our pathway to ensure a better sustainable future for ourselves and our children. And, you know, we know that millions of people this year, there's so many elections around the world in democracies that have the opportunity to vote. And yet around us here in Washington, D.C., I hear so much apathy and wonder how many people Morgan's age are going to be out there and voting. And apathy is the worst thing right now. We cannot be sitting back and not voting. It is up to all of us. We have this power every 2 to 4 years, depending on what election your cycle you're on, to go out there and choose the leaders that will represent us in the future we all want to have. So my one thing is definitely go vote.
Wonderful. And for those who are looking for other one things that they can do, you could always log on at odyssey.com, audacy.com/one thing. Ladies, happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
From Odyssey, this is Odyssey Conversations. As a part of Earth Month, News Radio KRLD in Dallas does a deep dive on the natural world. This is Odyssey Conversations, the state of the environment.
I'm John Little.
And I'm Kristen Diaz with KRLD in Dallas. And we're taking a deep dive into something that affects everyone in one way or another, regardless of where you live. When you say the word environment, it can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. But for some, it's as basic as air, water, and land, and where we live with animals and plants.
Now, for others, it's much more complex and much more passionate as well. It seems like every day we hear about another initiative to save the planet in one way or another, cut down on pollution maybe, or make products that are carbon neutral. We hear about sustainability and conservation as well.
We're going to be looking into everything from EVs to solar panels to what scientists can learn about the environment from the recent solar eclipse. And of course, the ever-changing weather. It's all happening on Odyssey Conversations, the state of the environment.
But Kristen, let's start with perhaps the most important conversation happening when you talk about the environment, the weather. We are joined now by Odyssey meteorologists Craig Allen, Dan Brunoff, and Tom Hale. Thank you all for joining us. We really appreciate it because between all three of you, I think it's safe to say you deal with pretty much every possible weather phenomenon imaginable, tornadoes to monster hail, super fog, earthquakes. One thing's for sure, there is no such thing as normal. Let's bring in Craig Allen right now. And Craig, first of all, why is weather important to the environment?
Over the last several years and over the last couple decades, actually, I have noticed a tremendous difference in my portion of the country across the Mid-Atlantic, the Northeast, New England, into the Ohio Valley. It has just been a remarkable change in intensity.
It does feel as though we've seen not only more intense, but also more frequent big weather events.
You're talking about dangerous and even sadly, in some cases, deadly conditions that have started to occur in a much greater frequency with each and every storm system that comes along here. Sure, we just get a day when there's just a shower or a thunderstorm, but it just seems like there is so much more to it over the last several decades around it. Well, I should say the last several years, and at least including to a decade or so of records that go on back.
Something that really scared me, and I don't scare easily, watching Hurricane Michael come rolling across the Gulf of Mexico a few years back, and it continued to increase in intensity all the way till it got on shore, hitting an Air Force base in Florida with winds of 177 miles an hour and going quickly from a 3 to a 5. And the Weather Service came out with a statement, and it was, if you don't evacuate now, we can't help you. And I've never read that statement before, but nowadays, I think Dan can concur, we're seeing more and more of those statements, including considerable damage and risk in our bulletins from the Weather Service.
You're listening to Odyssey Conversations, the state of the environment. I'm John Little, joined by Kristen Diaz, and we're talking with our Odyssey meteorologists, Craig Allen, Tom Hale, and Dan Brunoff. Dan, we hear a lot about climate change. In what ways are we seeing climate change play out in the weather.
With storms increasing in strength and frequency, droughts happening more frequently, wildfires seem to be happening more frequently. Yeah, the climate is changing some. And over the past 100 years, per decade since the turn of the century, since 1900, the planet has warmed about, we'll say, 0.16 degrees Fahrenheit, okay, per decade. So with the warming of the planet, we're still learning about how this will impact storms. Will desert areas become monsoonal areas and get more rain? Will the heavier rainy areas become drier as the planet warms slowly? Our technology is getting better and better, so we don't have an excuse not to be ready for this.
So, Tom, let's turn to you. Are climate and weather the same thing?
People have a great confusion as it relates to this. One of them is weather and climate are two completely different things. And so when people hear about issues of climate change, climate is weather calculated and averaged over years, whereas weather is something that happened today. And so if it's a cold day, it's easy to say there's no such thing going on as warming, and vice versa. That's a simple thing you need to not confuse, and it's easily done.
And Dan, I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well. Knowing the climate of an area, how does that help you with your forecasting?
Being in an area for an extended period of time, you know when you have your hiccups. Well, over time, you start to disagree with some of the data you're looking at because you've seen the same atmospheric conditions set up before and nothing has happened, or the same atmospheric conditions happen and there's a change in the path of the storm. So I've learned over time is I'm seeing these 14-day forecasts on some local markets. In my opinion, I don't think anybody should go out past 5 days.
I absolutely agree with you on that, Dan. And you will have more information that is more environmentally helpful to everybody who's listening to you, who's watching you out there, if you're telling them you better run to the basement or you better get prepared for flooding within the next 6 to 12 hours. There is no 5-day forecast or longer that remains the same every single day. It is inevitably going to change.
We hear terms like El Nino and La Nina, like those long-term weather patterns that we're in, or that we're in for a season. What are we in right now, and what does that pattern mean for us?
We are coming off a very strong El Nino, and that made a very big difference again for East Coast systems. Snow was very limited once again for the mid-Atlantic states and the major cities along I-95. We did not even make double-digit snowfall for New York City for the second year in a row, which is quite remarkable, but I think is definitely a trend not just associated with El Nino, but with so many other factors. And this obviously will have a big effect on future forecasts and long-range forecasts and what it will mean in terms of the environment around here when you don't get as much snowfall. It means a lot to commerce and to industry that thrive on snow through through the winter months.
So, Tom, what about the West Coast?
In this particular year, we had these large ridges off the West Coast of warm, moist air, and we had a blocking ridge across the United States, which kept the Alaskan and Canadian all the way up through the Arctic air bottled up. And so when it finally started coming down, it was like a slide. And in came the moisture from one side out of the Alaska Gulf. And the second thing was the cold air coming down along with it, just above it, combining, coming across the West Coast. Further south, because the air was much colder, it had been bottled up for so long through the winter that it had built up a lot. And so the West Coast just got hammered with enormous amounts of snow and with disturbances in that jet stream, one right after another.
Final question for you guys. Are there other ways, more unique ways, in which we may be seeing the effect of our weather and climate play out?
I think you could say this for all parts of the country, but around here, there are completely brand new insects. There are completely brand new types of trees, weeds, flowers, and the growing, I don't know if you've noticed, but the growing calendar, the growing season has shifted and become longer, And I, to just me personally, that to me is a very, very clear indication that we have definitely seen already a change in Earth as to what's happening with our climate change itself in terms of temperatures. I think we see a completely different type of situation setting up where different zones across the country are seeing more and more of severe things. Mm-hmm. And they are seeing more and more new things added to their environmental conditions across the country.
On April 8th, millions of people from across the world came together for one thing, to experience a rare total eclipse. A portion of 15 states were in the path of totality, and it had a profound effect on many.
It was like sheer visual poetry, and it impacts you at such a deep emotional level that it's beyond description.
It was absolutely magnificent.
Everyone goes from just cheering to just awe-inspired. You just hear the silence of everything.
We are part of an incredible gift on this planet. That's a miracle that it even exists, that we even exist. Like all the pieces that had to come together to allow for humankind to flourish on this planet, it's a miracle.
It was like life-changing. I mean, amazing.
Really cool, because like it was just like a once in a lifetime chance.
Gave me such a sense of perspective of our place in the universe, which was both humbling and uplifting because we're part of this.
It was amazing.
It was bigger than we thought it would be.
Yes.
The temperature change, the silence, the lack of the wind.
Yeah.
She wasn't the only one who noticed the changes in the temperature and the wind. You better believe NASA scientists have been very busy researching effects of the eclipse on the environment. Some are studying how it affects the weather and what it does to the atmosphere.
Many have been using various forms of data to learn more about how eclipses impact life on Earth. Some are studying how both animals and plants reacted when their world went dark.
NASA also runs something called the GLOW program. That's all about changes in cloud conditions and temperature. We continue Odyssey Conversations, the State of the Environment, and David Rankin talks with Dr. Trina Farrell with the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center about the program.
A week ago, the country stopped for the most part as the moon came between the Earth and the sun, and it eclipsed the sun's rays for a time. We got to see eclipse in 100% totality in some parts of the country, but the entire nation got a portion of it. NASA worked with a GLOW program to look at the effects of this kind of cosmic event and its impact on the environment. We're joined by Trina Farrell. She's with NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. Trina, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
How do scientists, especially folks at NASA, take a look at eclipses that civilians like us don't?
So we did a lot with the GLOW program that you mentioned, right? Because energy from the sun warms our planet and changes in sunlight can cause temperature, cloud, and wind changes. So with the Globe Observer app, we did was we wanted to see what would happen when the sun is blocked by the moon during the eclipse and how would it affect the solar powered process.
That's one thing that a lot of parts of the country deal with, is that there's a lot of their grids that deal with solar power. How much of an impact did you think it would have? And I know it's kind of early to figure out how much it did have.
So it is really early. We're still analyzing the data. But for example, I did get some information. So one of the schools did participate in the Dallas area. And I think we noticed like a 2.5 degree Fahrenheit change. Analyzing a lot of this data now. So we're looking forward to getting our results back.
What kind of answers are you expecting to get back that will kind of back up the hypothesis that you have?
Right. So we're going to observe. We wanted to observe how the clouds, how the eclipse changed the atmosphere conditions near Dallas by reporting on the clouds and the air temperature. We also reported on surface temperature conditions that may have impacted the difference in the atmospheric effects in varying locations. It's a citizen science effort, right? So we could have the public help us do our scientific research.
Do eclipses typically do that with a direct impact on temperature? And as you mentioned, in cloud cover, do they, since they happen every 18 months or so?
Yes, they do make a difference in these. And that's why this app, it's helped us. It's going to help us to determine this. And so we'll hopefully have the data analyzed this summer and into the fall, and we'll have exact results. So we're quite excited, but we were so excited about that eclipse. I mean, we were worried in the morning. It looked a little cloudy. But when the time came, it was just breathtaking and amazing.
What is it about eclipses that are just so fascinating to regular people?
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Because more than half the country stopped to watch this. What is it fascinating for regular people and for scientists?
Right. So I think for this one, it was just so fascinating, right? Because it hit so many major cities, right? And then we started in 2017. So I think a lot of people got interested and intrigued by the one in 2017. And then now we were able to get prepared more. And then this one just hit so many major cities, the path of totality. So I just think that people just got so involved. It was just so nice to see everyone, to meet people from all over the world. It was just an amazing experience. I feel like it just brought everyone together.
Now, eclipses don't necessarily happen in this kind of a way. To have one come across the country in 2017 and again one in 2024, is the science even known yet?
Each one's a little different, right? Each eclipse, right, is kind of unique in its own way. So it's a week later and I'm still feeling it. I'm still talking about it.
Thanks for listening to Odyssey Conversations.
Joining us right now is longtime Fort Worth developer and philanthropist Jim Austin. He's got the latest about the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum and much, much more. Hey, Jim, how's it going?
I'm real good, Chris. It is so good to talk to you, and always look forward to seeing you, my fraternity brother.
Yes, you are a part of that fraternity we call Kappa Alpha Psi, and it's all about achievement, and you have been achieving for years and years and years. I want people to, there's a lot of people in Fort Worth already know who you are. Like I said, your fingerprints are on so many different things. But a lot of people may not have known everything you've been doing for decades because you're kind of low-key. I mean, you're out there, but some of the things that you've accomplished, I mean, it just keeps happening in all different kind of areas. And for example, you're a part of and one of the founders of the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum. We're talking about cowboys. We're talking about rodeo. We're talking about the stockyards. Can you talk about how that even happened?
Well, let me start from a little bit from the beginning and maybe sure. How I got here to Fort Worth. I'm a country boy, born in North Carolina, raised in New Jersey, attended Howard University, got my degree in business and
HBCU.
Yes, HBCU all the way. Graduated in 76, joined American Express as a management training person, traveled all over the world for about a year. And then they called me. I was in New Orleans. They said, "You going to Fort Worth, brother?" So moved to Fort Worth in 77. I was a corporate guy for another 4 years, but I decided, and I had an earning to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I felt that if I could make millions for American Express, why couldn't I do it for myself? So I resigned because I fell in love with Fort Worth. I just wanted to stay here. I didn't want to move around the country with American Express. Great job, great training, but I hung my shingle out 43 years ago as a commercial real estate broker. And I've been running my company for 43 years and also known as the Fresh Prince of commercial real estate. I sell, lease, and tenant rep. So that's the job that pays me to be able to be a community guy.
Yeah, a philanthropist. And,
say that again?
A philanthropist. That's what they call guys like you that help out all kinds of organizations in their communities.
So I have another organization.
Well, before we go to your other organization, I got to give you you're kind of skimming through the real estate thing. You were on the council. Talk about how you weren't just a developer. you weren't just, you know, commercial real estate. You actually were part of, you know, Trek, I believe it is. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, yeah. In being a commercial real estate broker, there's probably one of the highest platforms is to be appointed to the Texas Real Estate Commission.
Exactly.
My friend, Governor George Bush, every time I would see him, he said, Jimmy, call me. I want to appoint you to something. So I was with my mentor, Vic Tinsley, one day, and he walked up and he said, look, I want to appoint you to something. So Vic said, hey, let's look at the Real Estate Commission. So the process is really heavy. Then we went to Roger Williams, went through the process. They called 40 people that knew who Jim Austin was and said, is this guy worthy of being appointed to the commission? And I guess nobody threw me under the bus, Chris. So I got appointed to the Texas Real Estate Commission and served on that position for 8 years. And normally you're on there for 6, but it took them a while to replace me. And that was some of my greatest times because the Real Estate Commission, you know, handles the rules and regulations
yes.
and the laws of being a real estate agent, broker, and other. So at that time, we had about 110 agents that we were representing.
This is really an amazing story. I mean, your life story is, it could be a documentary one of these days because you're not done yet. But I'm telling you, for you to do what you've been doing for these years, and again, starting with the real estate, with commercial real estate, and then getting on the commission, I'm sure that also opened your eyes to all kinds of situations where you could help people and where you could say, you know what, I know what we can do here if they just do it the correct way, you know, get the paperwork in, you know, get all of their ducks in a row. In other words, you were able to help guide some people as they were trying to go through their situations.
Well, I've been a mentor to a lot of folks within our community. Mm-hmm. And Tim Williams is a gentleman who was a friend, and Tim was selling insurance. And I told Tim, I said, look, why don't you try a career in commercial real estate? And now he stayed with me for 15 years, and now he has his own business doing commercial real estate.
It's fantastic. And I'm sure there's parts of like Stop 6 and over there near Dunbar High School and middle schools where you were able to help develop some things like your Jim Austin Event Center.
Yeah. I staked my career on Southeast Fort Worth. And when I got in the business 43 years ago, basically, a lot of the other brokers didn't care to come into Southeast Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm. They were skipping over it.
I can give you an example of over 100 different projects that happened in Southeast Fort Worth. And one of the big ones was at the corner of Evans and Rosedale. Mm-hmm. There's a site there that the city hired me to put together 80 properties for development. And that was a project we worked on for almost a year and a half, putting all that property together. So right now you can go over there and you can see the development that's taking place in that part of town. And on the corner of Miller and Barry, I was hired by Menards to put together 40 homes that we had to close on the same day.
Wow.
And that was very hard work, you know, for 1 year. Working with Doug Woodson, you know, knocking on people's doors and seeing if they would sell their property to Menards, which had to be done on the same day everybody had to sign over their property. So right now there's a Fiesta out there, and you go across the street, the Walgreens.
Mm-hmm.
I helped put that site together. And Southeast Fort Worth has been an area that right now is really happening because you got the Renaissance Square that Kathleen Hicks was so helpful in pulling that project together. And there are people that come into that Walmart that haven't seen each other in 20, 30 years But right now, Southeast Fort Worth is happening with a lot of great development.
You, like I said, we're talking to Jim Austin, a.k.a. the unofficial mayor of Fort Worth. Fingerprints all over everything. You are a developer and a philanthropist. Fort Worth has always celebrated Juneteenth way ahead of a lot of different communities, not only nationwide, but in the state of Texas. Could you talk about your connection with the wise one, Miss Juneteenth herself, the mother of Juneteenth, and the things that you guys have been able to do in Fort Worth on that end as well?
Well, Opal Lee.
That's right, Miss Opal Lee.
Yes, and when I moved to Texas, and I purchased probably 15 rental houses when I got here, because I was always told it's always good to invest in real estate. And Opal Lee lived up the street from one of the houses that I own. So I've known her since she has been pushing Juneteenth. And she's accomplished by getting Juneteenth as a national holiday.
Yes.
That President Biden signed the bill and Congress approved it. So we now celebrate June 19th as the official national holiday for the nation to celebrate Juneteenth and the discovery of finding that African Americans were free.
Yeah, you 2 years later.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years late, but celebrate Juneteenth and the fact of emancipation and finding out our history. And now Fort Worth is going to be the home of the National Juneteenth Museum that's going to be built on the corner of Evans and Rosedale. And that initiative right now, I think, is $120 million project.
Wow.
And I think they've raised about $75 to $80 million to build that institution for the museum to go right here in Fort Worth.
See, that's what's so impressive. Again, I've always said Fort Worth is like one of the biggest hidden secrets in North Texas, because you hear about Fort Worth, but you know, you don't really know. I mean, Dallas gets all the publicity, but there's so many things going on in Fort Worth, and so much history being made in Fort Worth, and history being reflected. And that brings us full circle again to what I was asking about with the Multicultural Heritage Museum that you helped found. And what made you want to do that? And again, we're talking about rodeos and cowboys and the stockyards and, you know, all the different things that that encompasses as well, because what a lot of people say is the West begins in Fort Worth.
Yes, Fort Worth is where the West begins. Well, previously, me and Tim Grace founded the Dr. Marion Brooks Living Legends Award Banquet. And Tim and I worked together to give scholarships away. We gave away $500,000 in scholarships over a 20-year period in the name of Dr. Marion Brooks, a Howard University physician that when I came to Fort Worth 45 years ago, that's only person I knew was his son, Clarence Brooks. So we did that for 20 years, every year, $25,000 a year to about 160 students received those monies to help them go to college. So one day, Chris, one of my classmates, Oscar Warren, approached me about going to the rodeo.
I know Oscar from way back in the day. Yep.
Back in the day, Oscar, just a mover and shaker out of Dallas. And we were at Howard University, and I was at Howard for 6 years. I partied for three, and in 3 years I got my books and I got my degree.
Okay, hold on. Side note. I gotta go ahead and give you some transparency. I don't even know if you knew this. Did you know my mother graduated from Howard? My sister and brother-in-law both graduated from Howard, went to Howard Law School, graduated from there. And on my wife's side of the family, I can't even tell you how many people on their side of the family went to Howard in Washington, D.C. My daddy still lives in Washington, D.C. I'm the outlier because I went to OU. But I'm very familiar with Howard. And again, Jim the Bison, I'm hearing all, yes. This is just, I'm just grinning over here because I'm so proud of what you guys have been doing. But continue on. I digress.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, our vice president, you know, is a Howard graduate.
Yes, she is.
And there's so many people in the world that have done great things that graduated from
So you
Howard,
were telling the story about Oscar having you go to a rodeo, Oscar Warren.
Yeah. Oscar calls me and he says, Jim, I want you to go to this rodeo so maybe you can use the rodeo to raise money for your scholarships. So my wife, Gloria, and I attended the Cowboys of Color Rodeo in the stockyards. And
the great Cleo Hearns. The great Cleo Hearns, yeah.
Cleo Hearns was with Oscar. So Cleo and I started the Cowboys of Color Rodeo 28 years ago. And when Cleo hooked up with me, we took it and grew it into a six-city rodeo. Mm-hmm. We were going to Austin, Houston, San Antonio, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we did that together for, you know, probably 20 years. Mm-hmm. And my wife, I told my wife, I said, honey, go up on the internet and see, is it true that 1/4 of the cowboys were Black and Hispanic? She went up there. And after we started hearing all these stories, she and I founded the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum, which highlights the fact that 1/4 of the cowboys were Black, Hispanic, Native American, and Asian, you know, because a lot of people don't realize that. And that's the purpose of our museum as we celebrate 24 years, that it's important that we let our young kids know that their heritage was strong. Because in growing up in New Jersey, you know, I did not realize that 1/4 of the cowboys, and I wish somebody had taught that to me when I was a kid about the history, because these minority kids, when they hear about this, they become better achievers and want to do more.
Right.
So it's important for our community to support the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum. Our website is cowboysofcolor.org, and become a member and come visit.
You know, it's great that Beyonce put out her album, Cowboy Carter. It climbed the pop music charts, the country music charts. And I think a lot of people, and by the way, she's from Houston, and a lot of people are, wow, I did not know. They're listening to the songs, and she's doing a lot of duets and with not only just Willie Nelson and Post Malone and Miley Cyrus, but she's doing it with some of the legendary Black country artists, the Black female country artists, and letting the spotlight shine on them as well. And for those who don't even know, and Jim, I'm sure you're fully aware of this. You've been around a long time. Beyonce and Destiny's Child, they used to perform at rodeos down in Houston.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, and, in other words, the spotlight is about to shine real bright, and maybe for the Multicultural Heritage Museum, you know, more people will be saying, oh, wow, I'm very proud of all of this background. I know it even more because Beyonce, with her big following, her beehive, is shining a light on cowboys of color.
Yes, yes. It will be another light of letting people know the importance of Black, Hispanic cowboys. You know, somebody that's probably a big, that you know, is Pam Grier.
Yes, she used to do those movies back in the 1970s. Yeah. Cleopatra Jones.
Right. When I met Pam Grier, I got a call from the book doc and the doc bookstore, and they said, look, Pam's coming to town. She's doing 5 book signings, and we need a sponsor. And I called my wife, and I said, honey, you know, Pam Grier, what she means to our community. So I sponsored the book tour, picked her up from the airport, brought her to my museum. Well, of course, she knew more about the Black cowboys and the history than I did. And we took her out to our 10 acres of land out in Southeast Fort Worth. And she said, Jim, let's get out. So we walked back there, Chris. We walked back and she said, look, you need to do a community garden, Jim Austin. I said, Pam, if you let me put your name on it, we will have the Pam Grier Community Garden.
Wow.
And that was about 15 years ago. So she's a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the Pam Grier Community Garden right here in Fort Worth.
Again, Jim Austin, your fingerprints are all over Fort Worth, especially in the Stop 6 area. And we mentioned, you know, Cowboys. We mentioned Beyonce's Cowboy Carter. You're hooking up with Dallas Cowboy, former Cowboys great, Greg Ellis, who's now an assistant coach with the Dallas Cowboys with that defensive line. And by the way, Greg Ellis, who's also a dear friend of mine, my Stephen A. Smith voice, Greg Ellis is also a movie producer. He did the Carter High School movie. Can you talk about this project you've got going on with Greg Ellis?
Greg and I met probably about 25 years ago. One of my board members, Cynthia Bailey, lived next to Greg. So I met him back in the day because I've been a Dallas Cowboy fan for a long time. So Greg approached me about a year ago. He said, Jim, I'm doing this movie called My Dear. It's about mental health in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to use your warehouse to shoot the first scene. And Jim, I ain't got no money, but I said, that's all right, Greg. You know, he'll be in there maybe 4-6 hours, 8 at the most. Well, he shot that a year ago. They were there for 24 hours. So now the movie's complete and the movie is so powerful. It's called My Dear. And it started out about mental health in the NFL and about, you know, the struggles that they go to. But the movie was so powerful that it's for everyone. So we're doing a walk in the month of May, May 18th. We're walking for mental wellness. It's a walk,
exactly.
Run, and fair. It's at Trinity Park, the Duck Pond. And you can come out and support Greg's effort to bring attention to mental wellness. And we will be there on that morning at 8 o'clock. You can register by going to Jim Austin online and hitting on the link. It's $25. And you can support this effort to spread the word during the month of May about mental wellness and what we need to be paying attention to. We will be showing the movie at the I Am Terrell Performing Arts Center on May 10th. We're actually going to have a VIP showing. It's not a premiere, but Greg and other celebrities will be there at 7:30. And you can go get your tickets by going to Jim Austin online. And on the 11th, we're doing a jazz concert at I Am Terrell with Yoko Mabuchi, who's coming in from California. She's an awesome pianist.
Mm-hmm.
The legendary creators will be here. They're doing Motown. And Chris, you remember Fingerprints.
Oh,
everybody
of course.
Remembers
Fingerprints. Yes.
So, yeah. So we'll be at I Am Terrell getting some good jazz, and Greg will be there. And we have an initiative called Paying It Forward, asking people to make donations into his nonprofit by paying it forward so we can get this movie into the national movie theaters.
Yeah, the movie theaters and the film festivals, all those things, the exposure.
Yeah, yeah. So My Dear.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
yeah,
My
go ahead.
Dear is the movie.
My Dear is a great project. And as you mentioned, that entire weekend in May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So it's the timing of it all. And of course, everybody knows, you know, especially in the NFL and with sports figures in particular, they have to go through a lot. It's not just the wins and the losses. It's now that we have social media, you know, people bully them. They act like they're just, you know, Madden figures, or they're, you know, they're gamers, you know, they're not real. They will touch on things that they would never say to some people in their faces. And that's part of, you know, they say, well, that's part of the price of being an athlete. You get paid a lot of money, but guess what? Sometimes you're young. Sometimes you're just, you know, out of college. You're just trying. And when you are on social media, I'm talking about these guys in the NFL, you know, that was their friends, their circle of friends. But now that they're in the spotlight nationally and internationally, and you got bullies and bots and everything else, and let alone the coach and the fans and the fans, if you're not winning, they're not happy. I could go on and on and on, and it actually wears guys down. They actually have, you know, psychiatrists, psychologists as part of the trainers with the different professional teams. And I'm sure this movie goes into some of those things because Greg has lived through all of this.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about a Greg Ellis, you talk about a legend,
mm-hmm.
a one who lived his life correctly and
yep.
is a family man and, you know, just a wonderful career that we can, you know, stand on his shoulders. And now he's calling on us to help support getting this movie because we got to show it in Arlington in November and I got to see it. And when you see this movie, it's so empowering mm-hmm. about the importance of sharing. So when the movie's over, he gives you about 20 or 25 places that you can go get some help.
That's great.
And
That's great.
I'm so excited about that. So Greg is definitely partnering with Jim Austin Online, and we're trying to get the word out about the movie. So go to jimaustinonline.com. There'll be a lot of information there that you can sign up for the walk run. You can come get a ticket to come see the movie on the 10th. And you can come out and get some good jazz, some good music with some great entertainment at the I Am Terrell Theater.
This is what's so amazing about what you do. Not only are you, like I said, the unofficial mayor of Fort Worth, and you're such a great connector, getting people together. And like I said, you have the wherewithal and the connections to help the different nonprofits or get people connected to the organizations where they can, you know, thrive. Not only do you have Jim Austin Online, the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum, the DFW Metroplex Jazz, the Warehouse Lounge, the Western Heritage Center, the Stockyards Podcast Studio. Jim, when do you sleep?
I get that question all the time. And, you know, I'm wired a lot different because when I moved to Texas, my brother came, my sister came, my parents came, but I had two great parents, you know, James Austin and Beatrice Austin. They worked two jobs to afford me, my sister and brother, 4 years of college education without having to work. It was just in that fourth year when my mama called me and said, son, the money has run out. You're going to have to go to the service or get yourself a job. And it's funny, Chris, that's when I straightened up and I went ahead and got a job and went on to become president of the School of Business, the second largest school at Howard University.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just got my act together. So I pay tribute to them for being great parents and giving me that opportunity. Because my mom always used to say, Chris, she said, you can do it. I know it's in there. But you better straighten up, son, because, you know, my mama was the leader of our home. And mm-hmm. I just
you didn't want to let her down. You didn't want to let her down.
Yeah. 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 So if we got a couple more minutes, I want to talk about Juneteenth a minute.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. Well, Opal Lee is doing Juneteenth and we're kind of partnering together. So Juneteenth, I've been kind of promoting on my own through Jim Austin Online for 5 years. And I've created a website called National Juneteenth Festival. And this is something I came up with and we started it 5 years ago. We go out to the top 100 cities. We contact and see what they're doing for Juneteenth. We post their activities on this website. So right now we're filling up with activities. And of course we started with Opal Lee's activities. We started with Jim Austin's activity, Dallas activities, Denton, and further. So if you know somebody in a particular city that's celebrating Juneteenth, make sure they go to Jim Austin Online's website, post their activities, But this year, we're doing an unbelievable concert over in Arlington at the Arlington ISD. We're opening up there June 6th, 7th, and 8th with three phenomenal concerts. We're bringing in the Dells on Thursday night. On Friday, we're bringing in the jazz ladies and the jazz women in pink. And then Saturday night, we're bringing in two groups that day, Triple Threat and Meeting in the Ladies Room on that night. So come and join, come out, support. We're just doing some great things and supporting the history of what African Americans have done, will do, and continue to do out of North Texas.
Jim, you are an amazing man. And again, developer, philanthropist, Mr. Fort Worth, unofficially the mayor of Fort Worth. We're grateful to have the great Jim Austin with us. Jim, we must do this again real soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for this opportunity. On behalf of my wife, Gloria Austin, myself, we are the co-founders of the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum. Check us out on cowboysofcolor.org.
And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.